Hello and welcome to the show. This is Ross Laguza, and for over 30 years, I have consulted on hundreds of high-stakes, complex, bet-the-company kinds of civil cases all over the country. Along the way, I've worked with thousands of the best lawyers, trained hundreds of fact and expert witnesses, and yes, participated in numerous jury selections. Today, I'm your 15-minute jury consultant. During the episodes of this podcast, I hope to provide trial lawyers, law students, jury consultants, basically anyone interested in the jury decision process with strategic insights, best practice tips, and plain talk designed to help you take your persuasion game to the next level. Ever find yourself wishing you had another chance to just add a little bit more information to what you're telling the jury? Well, I'm sure you do. So do I. This episode is about just filling in some of the details that I didn't cover before, because I'm trying to stay to 15 minutes. I'm doing the best I can with that. So let's hit a couple of topics. Probably one that I should have mentioned right off the bat is, you know, we're talking about jury selection in this series, and I don't particularly believe jury selection is the most important thing you can do. And that is different than what you hear from some consultants. And I explained earlier why some consultants lean into jury selection as their strongest asset, but actually think that because it's so difficult to predict human behavior, no matter how good you are, even if you are a prescient guru, you're going to run out of strikes before you run out of people you want to strike. That happens every single time. So it's really important that you are doing your work up front to understand how people are likely to come to your case. There will be people who do not think the way you do and do not think the way you want them to. And the creative question is the one that I always love digging into is, how do we get to these people? How do we talk to them? How do we make them understand that we know how they think about the case? We respect it. And we have answers, and we have a pathway for them to travel where they can feel okay about their decision at the end if they vote for us. That they'll be proud to say, yeah, I voted for this client or this party, and I did the right thing because. How are we going to get them there? Persuasion, and we're going to talk about persuasion and story building in another episode. That's where the real challenge is. And in the cases that I've been part of where we have a great story and we actually move people, that's the most satisfying thing. And that's really where you should be spending most of your time in building your story. Jury selection is great if you can catch some outliers. But other than that, you're going to have to persuade some people. And that's where the action is. So for me, jury selection has never been the most exciting thing I do. It's never the thing that I try to tout when I'm talking about my abilities. And I've probably limited myself because of that, but that's how I really think. We talked about questionnaires, and one thing I wanted to mention is that although some judges are getting better at managing this process, they tend to underestimate how long it takes to get questionnaires back, how long it takes to get copies to everyone, and how long it takes to review them. And I found that if you negotiate with the judge to have more time than he or she will allow, typically, for this process to take place, it will actually save time later. It'll save time during jury selection. It'll make jury selection go so much faster because everyone's had ample time to review the data that people have given them. I've been in trials where you get the questionnaires back while you're doing the voir dire, and you're desperately going through the questionnaires while you're talking, while the lawyer's talking to people. I'm thumbing through the questionnaire. I mean, it shouldn't be like that. So judges are well-meaning. They want to do it right, but their ideas about the logistical part of this tend to be just not good. And so it really helps to have a plan and go over it with the judge in advance when you're talking about, when you're having that meeting where you sit down and talk about jury selection and how it helps both sides to have enough time to get the questionnaires and really review them. It shouldn't be this crushing cram job overnight to get all these reviewed. Finally, on questionnaires, you don't always want one. I should have mentioned this during the questionnaire episode. You don't always want a questionnaire. On the plaintiff side, I almost never would want one. Almost never. Defense gets such an advantage with questionnaires, assuming they're asking good questions. And again, most of the questions are wasted. But if I'm a plaintiff and somebody says this is a complex case or whatever the reasoning is, should we have a questionnaire? And everybody says, yeah. If I'm the plaintiff, I say, I don't think so. I don't think I need that. And you don't. Most of the time, there's exceptions. The defense, you almost always want one, but I've seen defense cases too, where you realize that the information that's going to be developed is going to help the other side more. Sometimes that's when two corporations are suing each other. And you have an advantage with the jury because your story is, you've tested it, it resonates, it's strong, and it resonates across the board. You don't need to get a lot of information. You know you're going to succeed with the average person. So you don't want to give the other side an advantage. So don't always say yes to questionnaires. Be thoughtful about that. There are some situations where you have to make your strikes in real time right there as you sit there. I tend to prefer that. And the reason I tend to prefer it is because, as I discussed, our preparation, my preparation, and the lawyer's preparation is much different than typical. We don't have a lot of information to go through. We've reduced everything so that we can be very fast with our evaluations. We already know who the outliers are. We know statistically where people are on the risk curve. And so we can be quite surgical and strategic. And as I said before, I feel like when we can rush the other side, they make mistakes. So I like those real-time decisions, but that may not be for you. And you may want to advocate for having some time to process. When you have time to process, I mentioned that jury consultants can really earn their keep by managing this decision process. Here's how I do it. So you get everybody in the room who has a voice on jury selection. So we've already interviewed all the jurors. We already know what we know. We have questionnaires. Whatever we have our total amount of information. So they put us in a little room outside the courtroom, a jury room, or whatever it is. I have all the lawyers there. This is the first thing I do. Is I tell everyone, and I've already set this expectation in advance, so none of this is new information for them, but I remind them that there are certain jurors that are in play for our selection, and obviously you can do the math, number of strikes each side has, the number of jurors that you have to work with. And I say, the first thing we're going to do is I'm going to point, and so I write all the juror names up on a flip chart or chalkboard, or if I have to do it on a yellow pad, whatever. And I say, I'm going to go through each one, and all I want to hear is if you have any concern that you want to mention. I don't want to hear what the concern is. I just want to know if there's a concern so I can star that juror, and we'll come back to that person. It's very important that you don't get people saying what their concerns are because it slows it down. And then you have people arguing about it. It's just, we're not doing that yet. It's also really important that people understand, and there's always somebody in the group that will sit on their concern and won't say it until you get to the what you think is the end of the process. And then they'll say, well, you know, I'm worried. Or even worse, oh man, these people, after the jury is seated, then they say, wow, I was really worried about that one juror. Why didn't you say anything? Come on, don't do that. Don't be that person. I talk to my lawyers in advance and I prepare them to be bold and let me know. So we've got everyone starred who needs to be starred. Then I go back and say, you had a concern. What is the concern about this juror? And then I have them quickly rate how significant that concern is. And of course, I'll have an opinion about it. Others will have an opinion. But we get a sense of now, out of this group of concerns, who are the ones that we are most concerned about? Because we're not going to have all these strikes. We're not going to be able to strike all of them. So then we go through that, and we do that as efficiently as possible. That's the longest part. But again, sometimes we only have 10, 15 minutes, so I am moving this process along. So the last part of this is once we have agreed on the people we are going to strike, I then tell them what the other side is going to do. And it's a guesstimate, but it's based on my understanding of each juror and probably the ones they like and the ones they don't like. And so what I do is then I then make a picture of who's probably going to be actually on the jury after both sides exercise their strikes. And the reason I like to show that picture to the attorneys, because I know seeing how the jury is actually going to look is always a little stunning. And we sometimes lose that perspective when we're just focused on strikes, because we're thinking about, okay, it's good, we get rid of that person, we get rid of that person. But we still have sort of a wrong impression of what the jury is really going to look like. So when we remove the ones I think they're going to strike because they're too good for us, and we remove the ones we are striking, what's left over can be a bit alarming. And the reason I want to show that picture is, first of all, hello, reality check. Sometimes when they see the actual jury, what's probably going to look like, then they reevaluate one of the other people. They might say, you know what, I cannot have this person on. And I keep it moving. As the jury consultant, you have to run this process. If you are too weak during this process, it turns into a mishmash of people's random opinions, stereotypical thinking, old biases, old-fashioned ideas. You got to shut that stuff down. You cannot let that conversation get out of control, because you will lose your time and you will make panic decisions in the end. Okay, in the category of judge-directed voir dire, I'm not a big fan. Lawyers often ask me, what questions can we submit to the judge that he or she can ask that will be good for us? The problem I have is, even if the judge asks the questions, they normally don't use the same exact language. And what I find is in the questions that we have developed through empirical research, the wording of the question matters, and changing certain words or even changing some of the answer, potential answers on some of the forced choice things that we need to know will ruin the predictability, the predictive value of the question. A lot of good judges out there, but they should not be doing jury selection. Sorry, judges. Sometimes you get to interview jurors in person. That's really great. Sometimes it happens at the bench. Not so great. Jurors are very nervous being brought up. But you can sometimes see some interesting things and observe some of the outlier behavior I was talking about earlier. But sometimes you get to have them in a separate room. And that can be very interesting, what you can learn, especially in very sensitive cases. It really depends on the judge, though. They can really get in the way. You know, if they're interested in seating a jury right away, they will sometimes just steamroll that process. Even when someone says something like, I can't be fair, I can't do it, the judge will steamroll them into admitting that if they absolutely have to, they can try to be fair, and you do a double take, you know, you do one of those cartoon double takes because you can't believe the judge is doing this, but that happens. So doesn't always work, but it really does help you get to learn some interesting things. One of my favorite cases I worked on was pro bono. I was helping the plaintiffs in one of those cases in which there was a shooting on campus, and the case was being tried in the college's hometown where the shooting took place. So, you know, there were a lot of homers. But because we got to interview the jurors in person, it was really helpful at getting at their bias. There were so many different ways we could get at it, to look at any economic or social connections they had to the university, to the sporting programs, and so forth, and what they knew and believed about the incident, which was quite well publicized. People had opinions about it. And we were able to win that case. Okay, I think I've cleaned up all the things that needed to be cleaned up. There's always more information. But again, trying to keep these to 15 minutes. If you like what we are doing, we need to know. Reach out to us. The email is in the show notes. I'm saying us, it's just me. Reach out to me. And I would love to hear from you. The other thing you can do is pass these episodes on to lawyers that you know. We can grow this thing organically. That's the only way we're going to grow it. You know, there's a million podcasts out there, so the only way these things can grow is for you to share what you think is valuable. So do that if you would. I certainly appreciate it. And if this series goes well, then as I said before, I'm planning to do one on witness training. I'm planning to do one on story development because that's where the real action is. And I look forward to that. In the meantime, thank you again for listening and take care.